15th chapter.
Lord.
And this is long, so I'm going to invite you to be seated. Now all tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the wealth that will belong to me." So he divided his assets between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant region, and there he squandered his wealth in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place in that region, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that region, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against you and against, I'm sorry, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to the father, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now the elder son was in the field, and as he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. And he replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your assets with prostitutes, you killed a fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.' The gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ." Well, Jesus is faced with two groups, kind of caught in the middle. On the one hand, he's got crowds of tax collectors and sinners who are coming to hear him, people who have misused the gifts that God has given them. And on the other hand, he's got the scribes and the Pharisees, people who are deeply committed to following God's law and who raise questions of righteousness. Aren't those who have right relationships with God and their neighbors more deserving of Jesus' attention? Is really what they're asking. So to answer, Jesus tells them this parable, which is commonly known as the parable or the story of the prodigal son. Prodigal meaning wasteful. I guess we could also call it the parable of the broken home, or maybe better yet, a father with two unrighteous sons. What is righteousness? Well, Jesus once defined righteousness by saying, you know, holiness is loving God with all of your heart and with all of your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength, and loving your neighbor as yourself. He said, if you do that, well, you have fulfilled all of the law and all of the prophets. But when we don't love God with all that we are, and when we don't treat one another with love the way we would want to be treated or have or to love ourselves, well, then there's a lot of pain and sadness in life. Things get kind of miserable fast. Something like this, he said. There was a man who had two sons. Now, the man's well-to-do. I mean, he's well off, and the family lived quite comfortably. They apparently have a very nice house, and they have plenty to eat, and they have flocks, and they have a fatted calf, and they have land, and they have community, and they even have servants to make their labor easier. But the youngest son just wants to have fun. He's immature. He's selfish. He's self-seeking. He's focused on his own pleasure. He asks, maybe demands, that his father give him his share of what he would inherit at his father's death, which would probably be maybe 25%, because the oldest brother inherits the farm. And he has no regard for the impact it's going to have on the family or on anybody else, and he really doesn't care. In that culture, maybe in any culture, it's supremely insulting, shameful behavior to come and ask your parents to give you your inheritance while they're still alive. But the father who loves him beyond measure looks past that and grants the son's request. I'm sure the neighbors are shaking their heads thinking, oh, he's a fool. Why would he do that? Almost immediately, the youngest son liquidates his portion of the estate, which means he probably has to sell off a portion of the acreage. He has to sell off his chunk of the land. He sells off his part of the livestock, takes the cash, leaves home, and abandons his family. And I'm sure he broke his father's heart. I mean, now he's got a man who is going to be up all night worrying and watching and wondering what's become of his son. He shows no sign of love or respect for his family, for his father. Maybe there's a mother out there, for his brother or for anybody else who might be involved. They don't know where he went. They don't know if he's dead or alive. I doubt the father sleeps at night. The son squanders the money that he got from the sale, and he's living the good life until, of course, all the money's gone and he doesn't have anything to show for it. And I don't need to spell out what that looks like, because most of us have squandered a little money at some point in our lifetime, made some impulsive purchase. But the consequence of his choices is this. He finds himself living as an alien in a foreign land, a Gentile land. He has no friends, because once he stops picking up the tab at the bar, they're all gone. There's a famine in the land, and he's starving. He decides to get a job. He's given the option of working on a pig farm, which, if you're a spirit, you know, if you're a Jewish person, that's like the bottom. That is like hitting bottom in terms of spiritual cleanliness. And then to make matters worse, what the pigs are eating is starting to look really good. It says he comes to himself. Doesn't say he repented or that he felt bad about anybody but himself. It doesn't show any remorse for the pain he's caused his father, or maybe a mother, or the shame that he's brought on his family, or any of the confusion he left behind in his community. Now, there's none of that. There's just not really repentance, just an awareness, all of a sudden, you know, I think I was a lot better off before I left home. So he's going to go to his father and say all the right things and ask him to make me a hired hand. He's not looking for a relationship. He's looking for food and a job. How might we be squandering the inheritance that God has given us? Do we value the grace and the love that have been showered upon us? Do we seize what we can for ourselves and turn away from the people around us? Sometimes, yeah. Do we focus on things we shouldn't and fail to pay attention where we should? Do we sometimes wait until there's nothing left or the problems become insurmountable before we even think about returning to God? Do we try to say the right things in an attempt to get what we want from God in prayer? Do we make up pretty speeches? The youngest son travels back home. He's rehearsing his pretty speech along the way. He's got it down, Pat. He's going to say, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you." It's a good start. "But I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." Oh, gosh, he knows how to pull on those heartstrings. Children know how to do that. "Treat me like one of your hired hands." But even before he can reach the village, his father sees him, which tells us what? This father has been scanning the fields and the roads day after day, hour by hour, since that son left, hoping that he would return safely, praying for his son's safety. And so when he sees the son emerging there on the horizon, he immediately runs to him, which is kind of a shocking thing, I guess, for a dignified Middle Eastern father, a family patriarch. They don't run. Apparently, he runs, though, to his son, and he throws his arms around him, and he kisses him, and he's just overwhelmed with joy. When was the last time you saw the King of England run to greet anyone? Or Don Corleone in The Godfather. He doesn't run to greet his children. They approach when he grants them an audience and gives them permission. But this father runs in his joy, swept up in his overwhelming joy and relief. He throws his arms around the son and he kisses him, the son who he loves beyond measure. And the son tries to deliver the pretty little speech, but the father's not listening instead, because what? It doesn't matter. None of that matters. He just is so happy that he's home. And in the jubilee, he's determined to celebrate, and so he tells the servants, you know, "Hurry up, bring out a robe, the best robe, put it on him, bring the ring," it's probably a signet ring for the family, "put some sandals on his feet, kill the fatted calf, we're going to celebrate. The son of mine was dead and is alive again, he was lost and is found," and the celebration begins. But nobody thought about going out and telling the oldest son, the brother, that any of this was going on. He's still out there in the fields working. He's a hard worker. He never shirks. He's reliable. He's conscientious. And he's bitter. And when the family, when he's finally coming towards the house, at the end of the day, it makes you wonder, how long has the party been going on? When he finally calls it a day, he's walking back to the house, and he hears music and dancing. And we can imagine how he would have felt, how it feels to be forgotten, to be left out. And he has to ask one of the servants what's going on. And how embarrassing is that? I mean, he's the last one in the property to know. And the servant says, "Oh, sorry, your brother came home. And your father killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound. And the brother's angry. And he refuses to join the celebration." It's, you know, "I'm not going in. Just forget them, right? I'm done with them." So he's standing out in the yard, fuming, kind of having a pity party, but I can understand it. And at this point, somebody finally thinks to tell the father, and the father comes outside to find out where the oldest son is. And he begins to plead with him. And we can imagine how the father felt. He loves this son beyond measure. He loves both of his sons beyond measure. He would never, ever, ever in a million years have wanted to hurt him. He would never, ever, ever have wanted to make him feel left out or undervalued or forgotten or any of those things. He simply was so excited and caught up when the other one arrived and the celebration got going and everybody was busy and they just forgot. So he's left his guests and he's left his celebration. And he speaks to his oldest son. And he says, day after day after day, you and I, we work together. You know, we work together. We're partners. You're with me. He's trying to say, I think, you know, he's proud of his son. He relies on his son. They are partners. His son gives him joy. He assumed that his son knew all of this. He assumed that his son knew how much he was cherished. He didn't think it was something he had to say. It never occurred to him that his older son didn't know how much the father loved him. The son doesn't even address him as father, not dad, just you listen to me. You listen to me. For all these years, I have been working like a slave for you. And I have never disobeyed your command. And you have never given me so much as a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, not my brother, when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him. You even feel that pain, right? We have been there. We know that resentment and that jealousy. There it is, out in the open, and it's ugly. And there is no sign of grace or love or understanding anywhere in this interaction. There is no acknowledgement that he has a good life at home with his dad. There's no gratitude at that point for any blessings that he has in life or having a good home and enjoying all he has. Every time someone in the church thinks about having a celebration to celebrate you and the gifts you share and the volunteerism or just, you know, to celebrate you for who you are, it'll always come up, well, maybe we shouldn't. What if we miss somebody? What if somebody else's feelings get hurt? What about all the other people who are doing things? Won't they feel left out? And it's true, we are prone to get our feelings hurt sometimes, aren't we? I mean, I know, I have. When we aren't acknowledged, or when we think we're being taken for granted, or when people who do less seem to get rewards and attention. So now the father standing in the yard with the oldest son, trying to reconcile with him, trying to restore their right relationship. Son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. Everything. You're always with me. I love you, he's saying. I'm here for you. You have me, my honor, my home, our farm, my love, the fatted calves. It's all yours, son. He's listing the advantages and the blessings, which the son was not able to see for himself. All that he has to be thankful for. And you know, that's the remedy. Anytime we're feeling sorry for ourselves or bitter or jealous or whatever, down on life, frustrated with God, stewing in our own juices about something, the antidote is always to get outside of ourselves and show appreciation and love for someone else. We had to celebrate, the dad says, because this brother, your brother, this is your brother, was dead to us and he has come to life. He was lost and he has been found. You know, the greatest pain in this story, there's pain in that younger brother when he goes off and messes up, and there's pain in the older brother who's standing outside. But the greatest pain in the story is in the heart of the father, who loves his children and doesn't want them to suffer and who feels caught in between them. So Jesus is telling us, I think, this morning, whether we are tax collectors and sinners or scribes and Pharisees, he loves us all beyond measure. And that we are not to focus on ourselves, but instead to find the joy that comes in caring for and loving one another. Come, he says, celebrate together. Amen.